You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. All airwaves to the people. Coming up next, Good Morning Nueva York with me, your host, King Downing. Good morning.
In the sky, you know how I feel.
How are you this morning? Welcome to Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. We'll be here till 7 a.m. Michael G. Haskins is engineering in studio. If you're waking up now, rise and shine with us. If you're already up, stay with us. And if you're one of the many overnight and essential workers just turning in, let us tuck you in. It's a new day, a new month, a new decade. Get it done in 21. Yeah, I really, really, really hope you're getting up and having a great morning today. On today's program, 50 years ago, a Latinx self-defense organization took on the miserable health conditions in their community. How'd they do it? By taking over a hospital. A new documentary tells the story. The filmmaker and one of the organization's key members join us to talk takeovers and film. And in the second half of the program, police kill yet another black man, this time in a notorious county in Maryland. Joining us will be the mother, the lawyer, and a local activist. And we'll also listen to some of the music that the victim left behind. But first, weather. It's 77 degrees out. It's sunny, a high of 82, a low of 60. For the morning, we're looking at 72 degrees, mostly cloudy, 1% chance of rain. For the afternoon, 79 degrees, completely sunny, no chance of rain. And for the evening, 67 degrees, partly cloudy, 2% chance of rain. For tomorrow, Friday, a high of 72, a low of 60, cloudy with a 25% chance of rain. And now on with the program.
It's a new dawn. It's a new day.
New day.
Yeah.
Welcome to Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. We'll be here till 7 a.m. Michael G. Haskins is engineering in studio. 50 years ago, a Latinx self-defense organization took on the miserable health conditions in their community by taking over a hospital. A new documentary tells the story. The filmmaker and one of the organization's members join us today to talk takeovers and the film 51 years later. In the background, we opened up with Balante by Hooray for the Riff Raff featuring Alinda Segarra. And that's the walkout song of the film, and it's a great song. And there's also a video, so if you want to look that up, Balante by Hooray for the Riff Raff, it's a great, great video. And we have with us, well, first of all, the Latinx organization was the Young Lords, a national self-defense organization with New York chapters. The hospital takeover was in Lincoln Hospital in 1971. And joining us today to talk about it, our first guest has been on several times before, talking about things from labor to one of her other membership organizations, but the Black Panther Party. But here, she's speaking as a member of the Young Lords Party, who was a key part of the Lincoln Hospital takeover, and that's Cleo Silvers. Good morning, Cleo.
Good morning, King. Nice to be with you. Good morning, everyone.
Yes. Yeah. And we also have with us Emma Frances Snyder, who is the director and producer of this great documentary, The Takeover, that's now being aired, and we'll be giving you information on how you can see it. Welcome. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on today. It's really an honor. Thank you.
So, Cleo, let's start with you. What the hell was going on 50 years ago in the Bronx?
Well, 50 years ago, the South Bronx was a community of 800,000 people. One in four persons was addicted to heroin. The conditions were horrendous. Rats were biting babies. Housing conditions, no heat and hot water. The people were being stabbed and shot on a daily basis. The emergency room at Lincoln Hospital had no capacity to seriously deliver quality health care to the people of the South Bronx. You could be lying, your possibility of wait time to be seen in the emergency room was about 72 hours on average. There were stories of people going into surgery and having surgical instruments left in their bodies. There were stories of people going into surgery and having the wrong limb amputated. And, of course, Lincoln Hospital was a teaching hospital, so it was used by Albert Einstein College of Medicine to teach how to deal with diseases. So instead of having one doctor, you could have any number of doctors, and you could have five or six doctors come into your hospital room and be being taught about the disease that you have without your permission. We decided that patients and the people of the South Bronx and people everywhere had a right to free, quality, preventive health care. We We thought it was necessary, and it's still today necessary, to have door-to-door testing programs for diseases that are preventable, like diabetes, tuberculosis, anemia. These are the kinds of pre-developed diseases before you get it. If you're tested, you can eventually not have those diseases jump onto you if there's testing ahead of time. And we have been calling for door-to-door testing for preventive diseases for 51 years. We've not achieved that yet, but that's one of the real questions that are before people in the healthcare industry at this time. The free quality healthcare in any healthcare delivery setting is so important. Everyone deserves to have free healthcare. Healthcare is a right. And that's the other thing that that was the other important slogan, is that healthcare for everyone is a right, and that it should be free to all, and that it should be quality and delivered with respect and dignity from the people who are delivering the healthcare.
So how did the campaign build to the point that it was necessary to take the steps that you all took?
Well, we had begun with a coalition of people in the community. We had the Black Panther Party, of course, the Young Lords. We had community activists. We had doctors, nurses, staff members of all classifications from the hospital. And what we did is we set up a complaint table. And very quickly, the complaint table was set up in the emergency room. And the name of a little organization of people in the South Bronx was called the Think Lincoln Committee. So the Think Lincoln Committee established our little complaint table in the emergency room. And we put up our little signs, healthcare is a right. Should be no racism in healthcare delivery, and that our 10-point program for quality healthcare, which eventually became the Patient's Bill of Rights. And mm-hmm. we began to take complaints, but we also functioned as, in another way, we also began to intervene with the doctor and patient and translate so that patients could understand what the doctor was explaining to them about whatever their illness was. We began to triage and tell the doctors or explain to the doctors that, well, this patient is hurt more. This person with a gunshot should be seen before the person with the flu, that kind of thing. We also collected the complaints that people had about the way that they were treated, and those complaints went from everything that the doctor didn't tell me what prescription he was giving me and didn't explain to me what the how this medicine was going to react in my body, to the doctor called me honey and did not give me respect of calling me by my name and introducing themselves to me. And can I expect to see the same doctor the next time? So we collected thousands of complaints over a period of time, I would say about a 3 or 4 month period of time. And what we did is we took those complaints to the administration. Analyzed them. We put them in categories that the administration could understand, that anyone could understand. These are administrative issues. These are medical issues. These are bedside manner questions. And they just ignored us and refused to accept our requests for these changes to be made to make delivery better, healthcare delivery better. In the meantime, in the OBGYN department, a young woman from the Lincoln Detox, Carmen Rodriguez, was asked to have an abortion. And she, without her permission, was given a saline injection abortion. And she ended up dying. And that was the last straw for the young lords and the rest of the community. And there was a takeover based on the death of Sister Carmen Rodriguez. And it was a really, I mean, the thing was people in the community were up in arms. They were very, very supportive. They were, of the takeover itself. And it was a symbol, a symbolic gesture to ensure that the changes that are necessary in healthcare at that time for our community and for every community take shape. And in fact, many of them did. I want to just say the impact of the doctors, the young Lincoln Collective doctors in support of the struggle was very important. But what was most key was that the community supported the struggle.
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org, all airwaves to the people. We are talking about the 50th anniversary of the Young Lords Party for Self-Defense takeover of Lincoln Hospital, and we're doing that because we're focusing on a film that is now showing, which you can attend. The name of the film is Takeover. In addition to Cleo Silvers, who we're talking with just now, we're going to now turn to the producer and director of Takeover, a film that I've seen and I want to highly recommend. That's Emma Frances Snyder, producer, director. So what is it about this story that caught your attention?
Thank you so much for having me. So for me, I'm an activist, and I was really interested in learning more about successful modes of direct action. And I felt like this hospital was a beautiful cross-section of community worker-led activism supported by like the residents and professional staff, if you will. And, you know, there's so many things about what was happening in Lincoln Hospital that was more of really just like a microcosm or an example of the worst of the worst of our healthcare industry overall, right? So you have, what Cleo has in great depth described, people not understanding what's being done to them, translators not in hospitals. I mean, these we can now point to what was missing, but as Cleo stated, these were initially just complaints like, I don't understand what's going on. This doctor's being rude to me. I'm not, somebody did the wrong surgery. There was no chart. I mean, it's just, they refer to it as a butcher shop. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's kind of the worst of the worst examples. Example isn't even the right word, but just the worst of the worst that the American healthcare system has to offer, right? And so as somebody who's an activist and as somebody who's invested in universal healthcare and understanding how white people can support and work with community activists, I found that this story was perfect for that, as well as the emotion and drama that comes with a takeover. And like Cleo said, it didn't just, and in the film she also says, it didn't just pop off. We did everything. They worked for years. There's like campaigns trying to get the city, the administrative staff, to do something, and they wouldn't. And so at a certain point, if the city and the state are not listening to what the needs of the people are, what are you supposed to do? You know? And so for me, it was also understanding the trajectory of activism, right? So you start with petitions, you know, going to administrative staff, you know, you do, there's a process here. But at a certain point, if no one is listening and things are not getting better, you have no choice. And that was what I wanted to highlight here. You know, like the rhetorical question when I was making this film is like, what does it take for a group of young, like young teenagers to take over a hospital? What are the conditions? What is the situation in a society in which they become the moral compass? And so that was,
so we're going to,
No,
we're gonna hold it there because I think we've gotten people's appetites up, and I want to take a listen to the film, but I want to do two things beforehand. First, I want to let folks know that if you have any questions or comments, you can call in 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We call this the listener's open line, but it's the listener's line sponsored by the WBAI members and buddies who have made their pledges to the station. And thanks to that, this is now the WBAI listener and buddy call-in line. And you don't have to be a listener or buddy to call in, but maybe after you call, you'll become part of the station by going to give to WBAI.org and making your donation and keeping us on the air and bringing folks like this on. So the number is 212-209-2877. So before we listen to the trailer, what I'd like you to think about, Emma, and then speak on is, tell us the aesthetics you used to tell this story. But first, let's take a listen to the clip trailer from Takeover.
This is a story from New York. Not the New York of Manhattan Broadway, but from perhaps the toughest square mile in the city, in the South Bronx.
I was 14 years old when I joined the Young Lords. The Young Lords were a street gang that became politicized by the Black Panther Party.
We became visible as servants of the people. And the people began to understand that New York City offers no solution for spics or niggas or anyone else who's oppressed.
One of our targets was Lincoln Hospital.
That building was condemned 25 years ago. Condemned for rich people and opened up for poor people.
It was a place that you went to die.
Lincoln was called the butcher shop.
Blood stains on the walls, blood stains on the floors.
And there was a rat in the emergency room.
We have seen children get lead poisoning while hospitalized at Lincoln Hospital.
So we felt now is the time for us to say exactly how we're going to respond to the killings of our people.
Our plan was to take over Lincoln Hospital.
We have to begin to stand up as the people, the Puerto Rican people, and say that's enough. That's enough.
We've been asking for changes to take place, and you've paid no attention to us. You've thrown us out of your offices, and you've called the cops on us. So now we're putting you out. You've taken over a hospital. We're going to run it. You're out, and I will walk you to your car.
We immediately announced that we were not leaving until the city made a firm commitment to build a new hospital.
From El Barrio to Arecibo, Palante.
About 1,000 policemen were en route with high-powered rifles. They had vans all over the place.
If the police came in, it was going to be a bloodbath because the police hated the Young Lords.
We were terrified.
To all who had to hide, I'd say, Palante.
Power to the people means, including people, to gain control of their destiny.
The Young Lords were ahead of our time in terms of recognizing that healthcare is a right.
We wanted a revolutionary change to the health system in this country, and we still do.
No oppressor, it's invincible.
And there you have the trailer for Takeover, which is playing now, and we'll be giving you the information on how you can do that. Now, Emma, you took a pretty, and we have with us Cleo Silvers, who is a member not only of the Young Lords and part of the Lincoln Hospital takeover, but a member of the Black Panther Party. And we also have with us the director and producer of the film, and we're glad to have her on here, Emma Frances Snyder. So Emma, you use some pretty unique style here by doing recreations that looked so real in the first moment. I said, damn, the Young Lords had somebody jump out of the truck with them? and then I saw from some of the POV changes that they didn't have two people filming. So, but you did it in kind of an on-the-ground guerrilla film, you know, cinema verite style. So tell us about that.
Absolutely. And I just want to clarify that Tony Gerber of Market Road Films was the primary producer on this as well. I have to give him a huge amount of credit for being so supportive and helping to guide this vision this whole time. So for me, I love action films. And, you know, I also think that this story lends itself to, like, a takeover. And an occupation is very dramatic. There's so much planning. There were so many people involved. Like, there's so much courage and anxiety and nervousness and excitement. Like, I wanted the audience to sit in those moments and feel what they were feeling, to understand what it takes to do this. And for me, with the recreations, I really felt like it was the best way to, you know, create like a dramatic and interesting and exciting story that would keep younger audiences engaged. And so I was inspired by a third world newsreel filmmakers from that time, because, you know, it was very similar in style, you know, kind of run and gun. And so I worked closely with a cinematographer, Tine De Lucia, who, you know, we've been working on this film for about 7 years. And so we had a very specific aesthetic, and it really worked, and I have to credit it with, like, the style, the inspiration from Third World Newsreel. And the actual entire film is all archival and recreations, and I was so fortunate towards the end to collaborate with Hiram Maristani, one of the Young Lords. He was a young lord and also an amazing photographer. And he shared his collection of photos from that time. And so we were able to weave together news footage, his photos, and the recreations. And, you know, I think that it really kind of came together in a way that I could not have been happier with, to be honest.
We have just completely run the clock down, and I'm definitely going to bring you all back to talk about it. I know a lot of times people say that, but I've covered the history of the hospital and I've covered the campaign. Now there's a film about it, so I'm definitely going to be bringing this back. But in the time we have left, Emma, tell folks where they can see the film.
So right now we are, all of our screenings are sold out, which is so exciting. But you can watch virtually through the Tribeca website. So I believe it's tribeca.com/films/takeover-2021. And so you can watch virtually starting June 14th. And I'm so excited to come back. I love talking to you, and I love being able to talk with Cleo about this because, you know, she was so fundamental. And you heard her. She kicked out the administration. That was her.
Look, I've known Cleo for a while, and she's been doing a lot of kicking out, and everybody that it happened to had it coming to them, okay? So listen, thank you. Thank you all for being on. As I said, we'll be having you back. The film is Takeover. You must see it. I mean, it's one of those grip-your-seats film. You feel like you're running right along with them through the hospital. So thank you for being on. We'll be having you back. Folks, we'll be going through a few messages, and then we'll be talking about one of the issues that brought the Young Lords and the Black Panther Party into the forefront, and that is police brutality still going on today. In the background, Palante by Hooray for the Riff Raff featuring Alinda Segarra. So don't go anywhere.
To Juan Miguel Milagros Manuel Palante, to all who came before we say Palante, to my mother and my father I say Palante, to Julia and Sylvia Palante, to all
This is Bobby Humphrey. You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
WBAI accepts snowmobiles. If you have a snowmobile, we want it. We also want any extra cars, trucks, SUVs, RVs, boats, and more. Any reason is a good reason to give a vehicle to WBAI. Some do it to avoid the hassles of selling. Some like to skip the costs of repairing, while others just enjoy the good feelings of giving back to their community. But no matter your reason, donating a vehicle to WBAI is a great idea. And it's easy. Here's how it works. Simply call 866-WBAI-CAR. That's 866-922-4227. Or give online at WBAI.org/donate-your-car. Our vehicle donor support team will arrange your free pickup. When the driver arrives to tow away your great gift, you'll receive a donation receipt. Vehicle donations have the potential to drive hundreds and sometimes even thousands of dollars to WBAI. Call 866-WBAI-CAR or visit WBAI.org/donate-your-car.
Hi, this is Iggy Pop, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth.
Hi, this is Joe Strummer, and you're listening to WBAI, and it's all mixed up, and it's mixed in, too.
Okay.
Who's that man I see underneath the hanging tree? He looks just like me. So tell me, am I really free? Could have been my mother crying for my brother. Everybody's praying for peace, but who's gonna protect us from the police? Keep these chains on me, 'cause I don't wanna be another seed underneath the hanging tree. Brains on our bodies,
the color of
purple fruit.
Shoes.
that don't give a damn about you. I wonder sometimes, am I just living to die?
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. The program is Good Morning Nueva York. I'm your host, King Downing. We'll be here till the top of the hour. Michael G. Haskins is engineering in studio. In the background, Hanging Tree by Blake. In the second half of the program, not again. Police kill yet another black man, this time in a notorious county in Maryland. Joining us will be the mother, the family lawyer, and a local activist. And we'll also listen to some of the music that the victim left behind. That notorious county is Montgomery County in Maryland. And its police killed Kwamena Orkin. And they did it. This was one of the first opening up the new year, January 8th of this year. We have on the line with us Melody Cooper, who is the mother of Kwamena Orkin, and also Brian McDaniel, the family attorney in this case, and also a local organizer, Katie Stouse from the Silver Spring Justice Committee. Welcome, Melody.
Good morning.
Welcome, Brian.
Good morning, and thank you for having us.
And welcome, Katie.
Good morning. Thank you.
And I have to start off. I want to offer my condolences to you, Melody Cooper. And I am tired of doing programs and having mothers and other family members on the air. But we keep doing it because we've got to get to the bottom of each and every one of these cases and get justice. So let me just start off with you. Tell us what happened on January 8th, 2021.
Where was I?
Anywhere you want to start. What happened that night, and then how did you find out about it?
Well, I was home. I don't live in the state of Maryland. I received a phone call from my son's best friend stating that someone called him, and he doesn't live in Maryland either, and he went to find out that it was true that my son was shot by the police, and he was deceased, and they stayed out there over 7 hours waiting for them to move his body. They weren't allowing people to drive nowhere near into the neighborhood or the complex or anywhere in the surrounding area of it, so they had to park at a distance and walk as far as they could to see him laying there, that he had been shot by the police officer. And then maybe 3 hours after that, I received a call from a homicide detective stating that my son had succumbed to some injuries by a police officer. And I asked her, how many officers? She said she didn't know how many officers or how many times he had been shot, but he succumbed to his injuries.
And let me pick up the story with Attorney Brian McDaniel. Can you tell us what we know about this incident so far?
So what we do know is that plainclothes officers in connection with a cooperating informant were conducting an investigation in that area. There is certainly some concern about the involvement the cooperating informant in connection with these efforts and the allegation that Kwamina was in possession of a firearm on that day. We do know that these officers were plainclothes officers. We know that the interaction between Kwamina and the plainclothes officers did not take place in a limited period of time. In other words, in a short period of time, we have information suggesting that these officers were in the area and on the scene for approximately 4 to 5 hours before coming into contact with Kwamina. We know that these officers were outfitted with firearms. They had sidearms and were authorized to use those. But we also know that these officers were not required to wear body-worn camera. And the reason that probably many of your listeners have not heard of the name Kwamina Okron is because these officers, at the time that they chose to use deadly force in connection with their interaction with Kwamina, were not required to record those interactions by virtue of the body-worn camera. Had they been mandated to wear the body-worn camera, we would have been able to show by virtue of the footage that, in fact, at the time law enforcement officers chose to shoot Kwamina, that Kwamina did not have a firearm in his hand, and that, in fact, the first shots that were shot into his body were shot into his back. Why can I say that? I can say that because we have developed witnesses that were there and on the scene. These are civilian witnesses. These civilian witnesses who have told us and provided information in connection with their observations have said to us that when they saw Kwamina and they saw him then running from the police officers, that immediately before he was shot, he did not have a firearm in his hand, and he did not represent any danger to these officers at the time that they chose to shoot him in his back. What else do we know? We know that Kwamina remained there on the scene, and there is information that suggests that there was some manipulation of the scene even before he was actually taken from that location. And I say this in the way that I'm saying it, because we have not been provided all of the information from law enforcement. So, for instance, the crime scene report that would come along with the crime scene investigation, meaning the crime of actually shooting Kwamina, has not been provided to either our office or the family. The autopsy report that would come along with the information related to how many times Kwamina had been shot and where, and the trajectory of the bullets that entered his body, has not been provided under the guise of a continued investigation being conducted by a reciprocal agreement, if you will, between Montgomery County and Howard County. So the Howard County State's Attorney's Office is responsible for the investigation into the shooting, and because that investigation is ongoing, they have taken the position that they will not provide us with a lot of the information related to even the narrative that's going to be offered by these officers. What was interesting, though, because I did have an opportunity to meet with attorneys from the Howard County State's Attorney's Office, was that there were, and there, investigators, there were a number of witnesses that we had developed that they had not interviewed, and the investigation was continued after we had an opportunity to speak with them and to provide them information regarding the witnesses that I have suggested that we had earlier in our discussion. So it's our hope and our expectation that they're going to complete the investigation. That at the end of that investigation, having spoken with the witnesses that we've spoken with, that they would submit this information to a grand jury for determination by the grand jury as to whether or not these officers should be charged in the death of Kwamina. And it's our position, obviously, that given the information that we've developed, that these officers should be charged criminally, and that the responsible way to approach that question of whether or not they would be indicted should be one that is conducted under the auspice of the grand jury process, which allows citizens, not attorneys, not other police officers, not review boards, but allows citizens to review the information and to consider the information that's available, all of it, the totality of the information, in an effort to determine whether or not charges should be brought. And we believe that if, in fact, they are given all of the information available to law enforcement, including those witnesses who would say that at the time he was shot in his back and he was shot when he did not have a firearm in his hand, that should result in criminal charges against the officers. And so we are continuing to push both the local legislators. We're continuing to push the administration of the Gaithersburg Police Department, and we're continuing to push the state's attorney's office in Howard County to make sure that they do a full and fair and balanced investigation into this matter, and that we achieve justice for Palmetto.
Yes, I just want to let folks know you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, streaming live and available on demand at WBAI.org. We're talking about the January 8th killing of Kwamena Orkin by the Montgomery County Police. And we have been talking to Melody Cooper, Kwamena's mother. His mother, Brian McDaniel, who's the attorney in the case. We're getting ready to turn to Katie Staus, who's with the Silver Spring Justice Coalition. Just wanted to make one quick point that you heard Attorney McDaniel talk about his meeting with the Howard County lawyers, and that's because the case has been transferred from Montgomery County to Howard County for investigation and hopefully prosecution. You're listening to the station, and it's time again to take your phone calls. The phone line is open, 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. We've named this the WBAI Good Morning Nueva York WBAI Members and Buddies Hotline, but it's for anyone who wants to call in, and we do that because we hope you'll remember the station runs on donations, and we hope that after you call in, maybe you'll think, if you're not already a member, you'll think about becoming one. 212-209-2877. I wanted to turn back to you, Melody. Could you tell me something about what Kwamena was like and something about his music? Introduce the song, because we're going to listen to one of his songs.
Okay. Kwamena was a very bright, loving, caring, concerning, happy young man. He smiled a lot. He often went out of his way to help people. He would put other people before himself. He would always, in the morning, make sure he'd give me a big hug and a kiss before school or going out. And a lot of times he would like to tuck me in at night. Growing up as a little guy, even as he got a young adult, he would like to tuck me in at night. He was very friendly, funny, very humorous, and very talented. He learned how to fix cars at around the age of 12. He started rapping when he was about 2, and then he, around 12 or 13, he began writing and composing his own music. And he wrote a few songs before he was murdered, but 2 weeks prior to his murder, he wrote a song named Back to the Trenches. And I'm still trying to figure out why he named that song that, because it seemed to me as if he was telling his story of actually what happened to him on January 1st. It's a lot about how people can be so corrupt and crooked and never to be trusted, because as we see, that there's a lot of people that move as if they're snakes, as in like law enforcement officers. They're supposed to work towards helping and abiding and protecting and serving. In actuality, they're just wearing badges and committing hate crimes, hiding behind their badges. So that's the scenario of a snake. And
let's take a listen to Back in the Trenches. Very bittersweet to hear his energy and creativity, and knowing that he's gone. And he performed by the name of Money Mitch. So Back to the Trenches by Money Mitch.
Lalo 30. GTM. You gotta watch what you're doing when you in these streets, you hear me? You gotta stay dangerous. Finesse and a blessing. I know real, I know fake, I know zigging when they try and portray. Take your skin pill and show me a snake. If that's your man, why you bake him a cake? Bit my hand, used to give him a plate. See, they a snake you out, or they a take you out. I was gonna break you out. They say the good die young. Can somebody help me out? Cause I wanna make it out the game before and fuck the snake me out. I know who really will fake, I know who try for trade. Till your sand start to peel and prove it, nigga, you a snake. How the fuck you gonna say you my man? You let me starve when I needed to eat. I took the charge, you won't.
So that's sorry, that's Kwameta Orkin performing as Money Mitch, his song, maybe his last song, Back to the Trenches. So with the time we have left, I'd like to turn to Katie Stouse, who's with the Silver Spring Justice Coalition. Put this in perspective. What have you all been doing around this case?
Well, in general, you know, we've been, since Kwameta was killed in January by the Gaithersburg City Police inside Montgomery County, we've been trying to support Mrs. Cooper and in the things that she's been demanding and that their family needs, including the autopsy report they haven't received, the surveillance video that was available, medical, the police reports that were completed. And we've also been pushing to make sure the two things, one, that the plainclothes officers begin to wear body-worn camera, which just the police department here just adopted that policy about 3 weeks ago. And we have been pushing for that since January. And that also that they eliminate actually the plainclothes unit altogether. Plainclothes units around the country are associated with a lot of abuses, not only because a lot of them don't wear body-worn camera, but because they're kind of discreet when they're out in the public. And so they've been associated with more, more killings, more use of their weapons. And we're looking to get that data in for Maryland as well. We're supporting Ms. Cooper, who's looking for that specific data to show that problem existing in Maryland so that we can continue to push for the elimination of those units altogether because of their abuse. But in a larger perspective, in our area, there's been many killings by police. In Montgomery County in the last 10 years, there have been 8 people murdered by police. 7 of them were young black men. And so this is a larger problem. And looking beyond murders, we have a lot of abuse and disproportionality by race as well, in terms of arrests and other forms of abuse, no-knock warrants and all sort of abuse.
I'd urge people to look into the Silver Spring killing of Robert White by police officer Kevin Morris.
Absolutely.
We're out of time, so could you tell us how folks can get in contact with the Silver Spring Justice Coalition and support Melody Cooper and the family in getting justice, as well as the other people in the community?
For Silver Spring Justice Coalition, we're on Twitter at Silver Coalition, and you can DM us, or on Facebook at Silver Spring Justice Coalition. You can also DM us there. Mrs. Cooper can also say how, because Mrs. Cooper, I think you also had a special email if people wanted to contact you directly. Do you want to share that?
Sure. Go ahead.
Yes. My email address would be Kwameta, Kwameta 0831@gmail.com, and it was created after Kwame Nye was murdered so that I could be contacted directly in reference to his case.
Okay, so there you have it. My condolences again. As I said, I'm tired of this. We have to keep pushing to get justice in each and every case, but also collectively. So that's the Silver Spring Coalition. Look that up. And also, you can reach Ms. Cooper at Kwamena, Kwamena 0831@gmail.com. And if you missed any of that, email me at king@wbai.org, and I'll get you the information. Have a great rest of the week. This is my last show of the week. Have a good Friday, Saturday. We'll talk to you on Monday.
Flat on fucking no people, swiping so much and they thought I was Jesus. You wanna talk bank, I need me a visa. I'm good on my own, I don't even need you.
PUA clicking, I'm off with Trump and I'm good with them numbers. Come get what you want, put a cow on his head, he ain't done what he say.
I fuck with the two, I smoke on the one. I love my President Obama runs. This shit so gas, it smell like a skunk. I'm in the chop, I'm giving the fun.
Put a band on my feet cause I walk with the rich. I be hopping out hitting, I took me some risks. Lonely Dre, he was trying to get rich. When I find my man, hit him and his kid. Fashion. Hop out cool with the sea.
I need me a roll, can't buff with the pigs. Most of these niggas say I like my kids. That ain't all, you smoking a mid. Free my brother, he doing a bid.
Keep it on down low.
Talk dirty to them. Sick of see me, they hate that I punish the game. My youngest, they slimy, they step for a name. Still got the same gun, I'm like, man, it's some cane. If I spend your whole block, you gon' catch the whole thing. Stop tipping on Instagram, saying them names. Them to get me hot, scorching, flame. I got the job, gas, propane. I flood the city who don't know my name. I went to prison, thought that I would change. I have a tiger snake up in my veins. You get back door if you stay in your lane. My drinking records, we stay with them things. He try to step up his little ass.
Watching me, watching you. The hint of something special. The hint of something new. Checking out each other. Like a dream come true. Who's gonna make the first move?
Hey, baby.
Hey, what we gonna do? Let's check.
Hey, this is Shaka Khan, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM.
Hi, this is Hannah from WBAI's Premiums Department. As you may know, WBAI now has a new phone number to call to make donations or to pledge for premiums at 212-209-2950. Thank you for being a WBAI member and for making a contribution to keep the station afloat. But if you have a question about a premium, please do not call that number. All the call center can do is take down the info and send it to premiums@wbai.org, and time on the line costs us money. Instead, please email us directly with your question or concern. The email is premiums@wbai.org or call 212-209-2870. We promise to get back to you within a week's time. Again, please call 212-209-2870 if you have a question about a premium you ordered, or email premiums@wbai.org.
This is Phil Donahue, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5.
Good morning. It's 7 a.m. and 75 degrees in Central.